Okay, so this is the long-awaited, though maybe not by you, but by me, sorting lecture. So I'm going to talk about sorting algorithms today. And another name for this is Google 2. The reason for that is the way that when I first started talking about Google and how web search works, I said that it basically consists of three main pieces. The first piece is go out and collect the web pages. The people at Google or the machines at Google have to go out and find all the web pages that need to be indexed. So that's phase one, and that was graph search, and we talked about that. The second step is now that you've got all these web pages, you need to organize them in some way that makes it easy for them to be searched. And that turns out to involve ideas like sorting. And then step three is how do you actually make everything work fast so that when people type queries, they get an answer very quickly by using lots and lots of computers. And so that'll be Google 3, and that'll be on parallelism. This is now number two. So why am I telling you about sorting? One is that it actually is, as far as problems are concerned, it's fairly easy to understand and appreciate, figure out what it's about. It is extremely important. There's lots of stuff in computer science that, down at its heart, involves sorting in some way, organizing data. It's been so well studied that there's tons and tons of different algorithms and analysis techniques that have been used. And so you can learn almost everything about, you can learn a lot of different computer science tricks just by studying sorting. If you go to the Wikipedia page on sorting algorithms, which I did somewhat by accident, they actually have this very long list of sorting algorithms. We're not going to talk about very many. We're going to mainly talk about two different algorithms today. But it also gives you a sense of one of the main ideas of algorithm design, which is there's more than one way to skin a cat. And by that, what I mean is that once you've defined what the problem is, there can be many different ways of solving that problem, and some of them turn out to be better than others for different reasons. And so sorting is a great area of study in the sense that there are lots of different, people come up with very clever, very different ways of solving the problem, and they really do act very differently. It really matters which one you pick. So, all right, so I really wanted to make another demo for today, but the software that I have for the clickers just isn't making it easy for me to do this sort of thing. But let me see if I can do it not quite in an interactive way. So when I gave the lecture on graphs, I talked about a little subsection of the web that consisted of 9 web pages that are associated with the class in various ways. And let's say that we wanted to do web search just on those 9 pages. Let's say that, in particular, we want to know which of those 9 pages have the word purpose on them. Okay? And so here's what I did. I took just 3 of those pages, because 9 was too many. Just 3 of the pages, and here are all the words that appear on those pages. In fact, here's all the words that appear on page 3. Here's all the words that appear on page 4. Here's all the words that appear on page 9. Those are the 3 pages. So which page, if any, has the word purpose? Or tell me all of them that have the word purpose. Purpose. Okay. Nicely done. How did you do that? It jumped out at you. Yeah. All right. Here's another one. Walk through. Do you remember where it is? Can you direct me to it? Do you see it?
It's 201.4, the middle one.
Oh, there's 2 of them. You're right. It appears twice on that page. Very good. Okay. Now, I'm hoping, and you guys seem to be fairly good at this, which is a little disturbing to me, because this was supposed to be really hard. The fact that I just didn't leave them organized. I left them in the order that they actually appear on the page, right? So you see things like, from the course homepage, it has its own special term, which consists of concatenating Google and discovery, right? This is just the sentence. It's just the words in order. The only way, as far as I know, that you can solve this problem is is to either just read through the whole list, one word after another. Imagine if this was the whole web, that would be a full-time job. Or you just kind of stare at it and hope that it pops out at you. Just kind of do random glances at different parts and just hope that your eyes will figure out the word that you're looking for. Which turns out, from a computer science perspective, is not being a very good solution. Neither of them are good. One's too slow, and the other one depends on some aspect of perception that we don't understand very well. It turns out our eyes are actually very powerful parallel processing computers, if you will. And they can do some amazing things if you've got a pattern. It can actually search for things that pop out of the pattern amazingly well. There's people who actually study this. But anyway, and somehow you managed to get these to jump out. All right, so this is one way of organizing the words. And I would say, what I was hoping to do is use your clicker to actually find a word and then click it in. Is it on A, B, C, D, or E? But it turns out to be very awkward to do that. But I want to compare that to what if I present them in sorted order? Right, so I take all the words, and now they're not sorted by page anymore, they're sorted by in alphabetical order. So now I say, okay, can you find, throw up your hand if you can tell me what page the word socks appears on?
Four.
You see it too? Yeah, very good. All right. So it's four. Why? Because, you know, we've been practicing this since elementary school. P, S is after P. Here's where the S is, but SU is too far, so we pop up a little bit. Oh, wait, there's socks, along with page four. Okay? So I'm thinking that so more people found it more quickly than when we had the words all unsorted. So this turns out to be a powerful thing to do, both for people, but also for computers. What we can do now is if we actually have the whole web, all the words on the web in one big list someplace, if we sort that list, it's going to be so much faster to find which pages have those words than if we had to actually scan through every word in order. Okay, we can just kind of jump with a very small number of jump to where we want to be. So let's see how I want to proceed here. So let me stay on this topic for a little bit longer, and then I'll switch over to sorting. And now I've motivated why you want to sort, because if you sort the list, it's going to be much faster to find things. So I want to drill down on that a little bit more, and then I'll talk about how you actually go and sort. Has anybody seen this game? Guess who? I like this game. This is a fun game. I may have played it too much, and it's become I overanalyze it with my kids. And there's no better way to kill a game for your children than to overanalyze it and tell them what it has to do with logarithms and stuff. But that's okay, because you're not my kids. I'm gonna do it to you. So in this game, we're trying to guess one of the characters from a set of pictures, and we get to ask just yes-no questions. Yes-no questions, sounds like bits, right? We get to ask just yes-no questions, and once we can uniquely identify the other player's character, we'll win, assuming we can do it faster than the other player. There's a lot of little faces, and I didn't have them all scanned in. So I scanned in a different set of pictures instead. So this is a little more abstract, but it's the same game. So here's the game. The computer, the talk, is thinking of one of these shapes. And we're going to ask yes-no questions to try to figure out which one. So let me just to introduce you. Has anybody seen these cards before? You know what game this is from? It's a game called Set. It's a very cute game, actually. In fact, it says it at the top, Set cards. These are cards from a game called Set. On each card, there are symbols. The symbols have a color, one of three colors, purple, green, or red. They have some number of shapes on it, three different possibilities, one, two, or three. They can either be, they can be filled in three different ways. They can be empty, solid, or striped. And then the shapes themselves can be one of three different shapes. They can be diamonds, ovals, or squiggles. And all possible combinations of those features get you the full set of cards. In the real game, you're actually supposed to, the cards are laid out in front, and this is one of these visual pop-out kind of games. So both players are looking at the set of cards that are on the table, trying to find triples of cards that satisfy certain properties. Are there any here that I can show you? I'm kind of out of practice with this game. Yeah, okay, here's one. So this card, and this card together make a set, because they all have different shapes, they all have different numbers, they all have the same color, and they all have the same fill. And so it makes a set if it's either different on each dimension, they all have to be different or they all have to be the same. But you can't have something like this guy, and this guy, because these two have the same number, but this one's different, so it already is in doubt. Anyway, that's not the game we're playing here. The game that we're playing here is what yes-no question can we ask what series of yes-no questions can we ask to narrow down the card that we're trying to guess in as few guesses as possible? So, why don't you give me a yes-no question that we could ask? Yes, go ahead.
Is the color green?
Yeah, right. So we can say, is it a green card? And then if the computer knows the what the card is that we're trying to guess, it can either say yes. And if it's yes, how many cards do we have to guess from? These three green ones. If the answer is yes, it has to be one of those three. So now we've narrowed our search down to just those three. If the answer is no, then we've ruled out these three cards, and it has to be one of the other ones that are left on the table. Okay. So, would you say that was a good question to ask or not a good question to ask? Certainly a better question than, does it have a smiley face on it? Right? That would be a horrible question, because the answer, even without knowing what card it is, we know the answer is going to be no. So it doesn't rule anything out. So we'd like to say, well, what kind of questions really should we be asking here? So here's one question. Is it crosshatched? Does it have the little stripies on it? If we ask this question, and the answer is yes, then we narrow it down to these five cards. If the answer is no, then we rule out those five cards and everything else is what's left. There's 16 cards up there, so like 11. Right? So there's 11 possibilities left. So that's a perfectly reasonable question. Here's another question. Does it have is it a squiggle pattern? So if the answer is yes in this case, sorry, if the answer is no, then we've ruled out the squiggles and that leaves 8 possibilities. But if the answer is yes, then it has to be one of the squiggles, which in this case gives you 8 possibilities. So between the crosshatch question and the squiggle question, which one would you say is better and why? Or does it not matter? We're trying to, yeah, what do you think?
Squiggle one.
The squiggle one's better because you get to say squiggle. No, that's not it.
Because it's like half of it.
Because it's half. So why do you think that matters? Go ahead.
There's no matter if it's wrong or right, you're always gonna have the same amount. Like you always get it.
Same is, why is same valuable? So it's more than just the same. It's what you said is true, but it's not quite the whole story.
I mean, it's kind of because it's the same, but also, I don't know.
So here we're gonna, okay. Let me play the game with you right now. Here's what we're gonna do. Here's what we're gonna do. And you'll, first of all, you'll think I'm a schmuck, but I can live with that. Can we see this well enough? You know, there's got to be, there it is. All right, so I'm doing it on the board so that I can mark the answer as we go. All right.
So are we only using the bottom three?
We're only using the bottom, oh. We do, all right, you can sort of see them hanging out a little bit. I'll mark them just above. Oh, you'll just have to remember. Okay, so give me a question. Can you give me a question, a yes-no question? I'm thinking of a card. Is it purple? Okay, good. And by purple, you mean blue. No, I guess, you're right, it is purple. You're right, it's purple. So this one's purple. This one's purple. This one's purple, and this one's purple. Do we agree on which one's least of purple?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4 of them. And I'm going to say no, it's not purple. Okay. So we'll cross this one out. And we'll cross this one out. So we know it's not this. We know it's not this. We know it's not this. All right, somebody else give me a question. Yeah, go ahead.
Is it squiggled?
Is it squiggled? Okay, is it squiggled? So of the ones we have left, how many are left now? 1, 2, 3, 4 I got rid of? Oh, wait. 1, 2, 3, 4 got rid of. So there's 12 left. And you want to know if it's squiggled. There's one left that's squiggled, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's exactly 6 of them. Okay, so sure, it's squiggled. All right, so it's not this one, it's not this one, it's not this one, it's not this one, and it's not this guy or this guy. So now we're down to 6. There's 6 cards left. Yeah, what do you think?
Are there 2 squiggles?
Are they 2 squiggles?
Oh, wait.
I'm going to go with two squiggles. I'm going to go with two squiggles. So we've got, could be this one. In fact, this is the only two squiggle left. No, I'm afraid it's not a two squiggle. No, it's not. So there's five then. Yeah.
Is it green?
Is it green? Is it green? So it could be this guy or this guy. I'm going to say it's actually not green, surprisingly. So now we're down to three. Yeah?
Is it a single squiggle?
Is it just one squiggle? It is hard without the chalkboard extending all the way up here. So the ones left, the three left are this one, and that. Okay, there's, and you want to know if it's one squiggle? Actually, it is. Yes, it is in fact one squiggle, leaving us with two possibilities.
Is it a solid
squiggle? Is it a solid squiggle? There you go. Wait, you don't mean solid?
Because
the answer won't be no. None of them are solid.
Shaded.
Is it like crosshatched like this? And the answer is yes. You got it. All right, well done. It is this guy. All right, so how many guesses was this all together? We started with 16. You did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guesses all together. And what was I doing? I was going against your guesses, right? I was being a bit of a schmuck. And the point was, I was always leaving it, going against the guesses in particular didn't mean always saying no or always saying yes. It meant always letting you rule out as few cards as possible. So if you ask something like, is it three purple ovals? If I was just saying it random, the answer might have been yes. But the fact of the matter is, since I was being a jerk, I will say no. I'll just rule out that one, and you still have a whole ton still to deal with. And so what you'd like to do is make it so that even if I'm being a jerk, right, even if the world is out to get you, you're still going to get the guesses done as quickly as possible. And I think it was sort of becoming clear that the way to defeat me as the jerk is to always ask a question where the worst of the yes and no is as small as possible. In other words, make them the same. Right? If we're splitting into two sets, we want the size of those two sets to be equal, if we can do that. If there's five left, then sure, you're going to have to split it 2-3, and I'll give you the three, but nevertheless, you're trying to make it as even as possible. Okay? Does anyone have a question about that? Is that clear? That's the strategy in this game, and it's true in the Guess Who game as well. What if there's not an easy question that splits things in half? Right, so it just so happens that I set this up so that squiggle, the first question is squiggle. And that gets you down to 8 from 16. But is there a question that splits this set in half? The oval, there's 5 ovals. And there's 3 diamonds, so that's not it. In this case there's 4 that are completely filled. 1, 2, 3, 4. But nothing, and this is how I made Guess Who not fun anymore at home. You can always ask a question. The rules don't say that you can't ask a question of the form, is it this guy, this guy, this guy, or this guy? Yes or no? Is it one of these 4? So I can always split it exactly in half now, right? Because I can always just pick any half and just say, is it in this half? The rules don't say you can't do that. And then the game suddenly becomes not so fun anymore. All right, so that's the insight is that we want to split into two. We want to pick the question so that the larger the two subsets is as small as possible, which we get by splitting things in half. How many questions is it going to take? Say we start off with 16. There's 16 cards. We show that we can actually defeat the jerk in 6 guesses. What's the smallest number of guesses that we can do it in? 4. I heard a 4. Yeah, why 4? Good. All right, so if it's n, can you put that together? So 16, if it's 16, you're right, the answer is 4. If there were 32, well, then you'd have to double it once more, so it'd be 5. So, but in general, if there's n things and we're trying to pick among them.
I'm not sure what you're looking at. If you're looking for an exact answer, but you're trying to...
Mostly.
How many times you could have them?
Yes, it's the same as that, which is log. Log makes 2, that's right. That's exactly right. So If there was just one card, we could do it with no questions. If there's two cards, it takes one question. If there's four cards, it takes two questions. If there's 8, 3, 16, 4, and in general, if there's n cards, it's helpful if n is a power of 2. Otherwise, you have to kind of round this in a somewhat annoying way. But more or less, you end up with a logarithmic number of guesses before you get down to 1. Because that's the number of times you can have a number before you get down to 1. All right, so I'm going to take this the rest of the way. All right, so sorry. All right. In the case where I showed all kinds of random cards that you have to choose among, the question asking can be kind of tricky. But let's imagine instead that we're actually trying to pick a number from a list, and that list is sorted. Okay? If the list is sorted, then what's the easy way of asking the question so that you'll know which half it's in after you get the answer? I think I just gave away the answer. Let me try it again. What's a convenient way of asking a question of a list of numbers so that you'll be guaranteed that a yes answer and a no answer will both give you half of the list?
Average.
Average isn't quite right, but it's the right intuition. You want something in the middle-ish. So I give you the sort of, say there's, here we go. There's 7 elements in the list. More than or less than what?
D.
The middle guy, right. So you want the middle guy, which if everything were balanced would be the average. But in fact, let's say that this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 110. Now the average is going to be way over here and you're not going to split it in half. But what you want to do is say, is it bigger or less than the middle number? Once you do that, then you can throw away some of the elements and you're left with a smaller list and you can still ask, is it bigger or less than the middle number? You can just keep doing that, halving and halving and halving. So if this is a list of n integers that's sorted, and we're trying to find where in the list a particular integer falls, we can do that same trick. We can do it in log n questions by splitting the list in half, finding out which half we're in, taking that half, splitting it in half again, and by after log questions, log base 2 of the number of items questions, we're going to have whittled ourselves down to a single number. That's maybe what's going on when you have this big long list of sorted words that you're trying to choose among. In the index case, you can, look near the middle. You may have done this with a dictionary. I guess you get more sophisticated as you get older. But in the beginning, you say, "Oh, I have no idea where the word, Messerschmitt is going to fall. So I'll pick the middle of the dictionary and see which half it's in. Throw away the other half. Now I'm left with fewer pages." I look in the middle of that and say, all right, is Messerschmitt before or after that in the list? Throw away that half. And after just a couple times of halving the number of pages, we get down to the page that has the word. And then again, we can do that same trick within the page and get down to the word that we want. And find out that it's not actually in the dictionary where we spelled it wrong. All right, so this is a better way of finding an element in a sorted list than, for example, saying, oh, is this the one, is this the one, is this the one, is this the one, is this one. That's going to grow with the length of the list, n. So that's going to be a linear algorithm. Whereas what we're talking about now, this successive splitting, is going to be logarithmic, exponentially better. I don't know if I used exponentially correctly there. All right. So having sorted lists is a useful thing. So let's talk about how we can actually get a sorted list. So I want to start off, I'm going to talk about two different sorting algorithms that are very different in a lot of ways. I'm going to start off with, but they're both relatively simple and I can explain them and I can demonstrate them without too much trouble. So the first one I'm going to tell you about is selection sort. Now if you've ever sorted cards, if you ever played a card game or something like that, so you've got a bunch of cards and you want to put them in order so you know if you have pairs of sixes or so forth. One of the things you can do is this idea. What we're going to do is we're going to run through all the cards looking for the smallest one. So I see an ace here. So I'm going to take the ace and I'm going to, if no one's looking, right, I can put that down and I know that's the smallest. And now what do I do next? I go looking for the next smallest or whatever's the smallest from what's left. So I don't see any more aces, but I do see a 2. So I take that out, I select it, put it down. Okay. I could Does anybody want to see this better? Because here's what I could do. I could turn the camera on my computer and deal them out onto the keyboard, and then it'll be, there'll be like big me dealing cards up on the screen. All right, I'll try that. See if this actually does anything helpful. One of the many gimmicks for today. I've been practicing the dealing thing, but I haven't been practicing doing it in front of the camera. So we'll see. That would be the back of my leg. All right. So can you see? Hello. Cards. Okay. So, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to.
Can't see the key.
You can't see the card anymore. You can do this. This is weird because I'm looking not where I'm looking. All right. So, all right. Can you? Is that close enough? Can you see it? What card is that?
Seven.
All right. So, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to run through all the cards. I'll say five is the smallest so far. So I'll keep the smallest one on my left. Oh, sorry. Two. That goes over there. Two is smaller. Now you could do this faster just by looking, I'm sure. But I'm just being systematic about it. All right, so I found the smallest card. It's the ace. I set that aside. And now I do it again. I go looking through. All right, two is small. There's another two. There's another two. All right, found the next smallest. There's another two. Nothing smaller than that. All right, set it aside. Go looking again. Let's see, four is small so far. Now three. Oh, sorry, there's two. Who wants to watch me sort this entire pack? Probably nobody, because it's going to be really slow. You actually do want to see that? Like, what could be more fun? All right, so anyway, but is the algorithm not clear to anybody? Does anybody, why does this work? Why do we end up with a sorted list when we're done this? So we've got our ace to, is it mirror reverse?
Yeah.
I don't know how to fix that. But I understand why they do that, because usually the camera's pointing at your face, and when you see your face not mirror reversed, it's very disturbing. So this is, when you look at the screen, it looks like you're looking in a mirror, which people are comfortable with. So they mirror reverse everything, which makes this demo awkward. Anyway, but you can see, this is an ace, two, three, four. No, sorry, ace, two, two, two. Will this, if I keep doing this, I keep running through the deck, I always pick whatever's the smallest, I add it to my list of sorted cards, and then I just continue doing that until I've exhausted what's in my hand. What I put down, is this going to be sorted?
Yeah,
right. Why? Because how can it not be sorted? The only way it could not be sorted is if I put down a card that's smaller after I had already put down a card that's bigger, but I can't do that, because when I went to put down that bigger card, the smaller card was in my hand. I should have put that one down instead. So if I really follow these rules, the cards that get down put down on the table will be in sorted order. Okay, how long will this take? How many times will I flip a card onto the table if I've got... let's say I've got five cards. One, two, three, four, five. All right, so I'm going to do this process again. I'm going to go one, two, three, four, five. I found the smallest. I'm going to do it again. One, two, three,
six,
four.
Seven,
I found the smallest. What's that?
Six, seven, eight.
Oh, the total. Yes, right. Sorry. I'll keep it. This was first. It was five, and then four. Is that what I did? And then let's see. One, two, three. I found the smallest. And then one, two. I found the smallest. And then I don't have to do anything actually. I sorted them. Woohoo! Five cards, and it took me number of flips down that I had to do is 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. All right. How does that grow as I deal more and more cards out? So if I've got, for example, N cards, how long is this going to take? How many flip downs am I going to have to do before I'm all through? Is it like log? Is it like linear? Is it like quadratic? Is it like?
Isn't the exclamation point?
Is it like factorial? Oh, no. But that's good use of factorial. Factorial is the number of different ways I can order the cards. That's true. But I'm not actually going through all the orderings. That would be one way to sort, by the way, right? What I do is I take the cards and I mix them up in every possible way until I notice that I happen to mix it into a sorted order, and then I'm done. The running time for that algorithm is big O of n factorial. N factorial is n times n minus 1 times n minus 2 times n. This is very, very big. This is bigger than exponential, actually. That would be bad. We would like the running time to be lower than that. But look at this sum. Look, how does this generalize? What is that going to give me if I've got n cards? The first time through to find the smallest is going to take me how many flips? If I've got n cards, I'm flipping through all of them to find the smallest. So the number of flips is n. All right. So and then n and n minus 1 and n minus 2. And that total is going to be like what? Even the tatty people are stumped. All right, so the first time through is n. The second time through is like n minus 1. The next time through is like n minus 2. And we're going to keep doing that until we're down to the very last part. So the total amount of flips that I do, if this is n and this is n, is kind of like n times n, you know, over 2, which is big O of n squared. This is quadratic, right? Is that where we were going? Anybody? I keep saying quadratic, and I keep thinking, oh, and this time everybody gets it. But I'm not sure that you do. Do they have a question about why, what I meant here, what this is supposed to mean? It's like that running thing, right, where you, or the boardwalk, or the path building thing, right, where first time through we go the whole way, the next time through we can take it back a little, the next time through we take it back a little more, and you just sum all those up, it's like n squared over 2. It's like quadratic. There, I did it again. All right, so so that's selection sort. Anything more to say about that? Let's see. Ah, my face. All right, so so that's the description of selection sort. I also did a brief analysis of selection sort. Here's what it looks like in Python. We're going to build, so we're given a list L. We're going to build a sorted list. It starts off empty. That those are the cards that I dealt onto the table. Initially, there's nothing there. While we still have cards, in other words, while the length of the list that we're working with is greater than 0, what we're going to do is we're going to call some subroutine called find smallest. It's going to give us back the smallest card and then all the rest of them. Then we're going to take that smallest card and we're going to stick it on the end of our sorted list, just like I did on the table. We're going to take the rest of the cards and say that's the list that we've got, whatever's left in our hand. We're going to keep doing that until we've exhausted the list, and then we return the sorted list. How do we find the smallest? The smallest, we'll say initially it's whatever card is in the beginning of the list. And what we're going to do is run through all the cards, and if we find a card that's smaller than the one that we thought was the smallest, that'll be our new smallest. Otherwise, everything else gets added to the pile rest, and we return smallest and rest. Okay, so this is more or less literally the algorithm, right? This is exactly the way that I was dealing it out, except in computer code instead of just in words. And this runs. I actually type this in, and it actually sorts lists, so that's good. All right. Does the running time of this algorithm depend on whether or not the... Let's say I start off and somebody has already sorted the cards for me, but I didn't realize it. Would that make things faster? Would this algorithm actually take advantage of that and sort faster? What?
Would it be like cards? Like, if they're already in order, you're going to already pull yourself out. I mean, it'd be done quicker.
It could be, but the way that I described this algorithm, it's still going to run through all of them finding the smallest. And so to do that, it sort of won't notice that the smallest one was the one that was in the very beginning, repeatedly. And so it actually won't benefit. There are other algorithms that would benefit from that, but this one, selection sort, doesn't. So in this case, the answer is no. It doesn't actually matter. So all right. So given I'm sure you've sorted things, spelling words, if nothing else, files in an office, these probably sorted things. This the selection sort that I just described is really just one way to do it, right? You take a pile, find the smallest, move it out, repeat. Can you think of any other ways to sort? Can you describe them in words so that I could maybe connect them up with some existing algorithm? So how would you sort something? Would you is selection sort your sort of choice, or do you have another way of doing it? If you had to sort something. Don't make me give you an unsorted list.
You could group things?
Sometimes, okay, group things how?
Like, say, like, for the cards,
yeah.
Like, all the aces in a pile. Like, if you don't do the whole thing,
so once through, since we know, in the case of cards, that there's only 13 different cards, right? We can have 13 piles, and we can just deal out the ace into the ace pile, and if we get a 10, we can put it in the 10 pile, and then we're done, basically, right? That's called bin sort. It's not on the list here. The running time of that is very good. It's order n, because you just run through everything once. But you need this notion that you know how many different categories there are in advance. So if these weren't cards, if these were instead, say, you know, names of Ben and Jerry ice cream flavors, that you know where my head is now, then you can't quite do that, right? Because you don't know how to pile them out. And you could have a retort to that. I don't know if you do. What if it were Ben and Jerry ice cream flavors instead of playing cards?
It could be like how many have peanut butter in it, and how many have.
So if you, that's right. if you're an ice cream expert, it's possible you could categorize them. But if you're trying to alphabetize them, knowing that whether or not there's peanut butter in them is not really quite the right property. So how would you do this? So you're working in a supermarket and you've got a case full of Ben & Jerry's flavors, and you know how customers are, right? They want to be able to find what they want in log time. So, some customers, me. So what do you? So you've got to organize the all the flavors so that they're in alphabetical order from. What is that? Sure. No, but I was thinking by the names. I was trying to think of an ice cream flavor that started with A. Apple pie is a flavor, sure. There we go. From apple pie to something later in the alphabet. So what do you do? You take all the ice cream out, you eat it, and then you don't have to worry about this. You get fired, you're not even doing the job anymore. No. Surely you have a better way to do this. So they're already up there, they're already on the shelves, but they're not sorted. So what do you do first? Run screaming from the hall. Surely you can sort them. Case full of ice cream flavors. I don't doubt that you could do this. You might not be able to put it in words right away. You can help me out here.
I'll just group them by the letters, right?
So that was the retort that I was expecting you to give. Right, so you could do the same kind of trick here, but you group them by, say, first letter. And you know there's only 26 of those, there's only 26 piles. Once you've gotten all the A's together, you can sort within the A's. Yeah, that's called radix sort, and that works too. Let's say that all we're allowed to do, though, is comparisons. All we're allowed to do is say, is this flavor before or after this flavor in the alphabet? Then you can't quite do that trick. You need a different trick. All you can do is say, like what I did with the cards, all I said is, all right, I've got a card. Is this the smallest? Let's see, is it smaller than this one? Is it smaller than this one? Is it smaller than this one? No, all right, now this is the new smallest. It's smaller than this one, smaller than this one, and so forth. Just yes, no answers on the is it smaller question. So another thing you can do, it's called bubble sort, no relation to bubble gum. What you do there is you look at the whole case of ice cream flavors and you look for two containers of ice cream that are next to each other that are not in order. And you switch them. And then you do it again. You just look around, okay, oh, there's another one that's out of order. You just keep doing this and eventually it has to stop because what's happening is the ice cream flavors that need to be higher up in the list are slowly making their way up towards their final position. So this is called bubble sort, and the reason it's called bubble sort is if you actually watch this in fast motion, what it looks like is the flavors that are far out of elements of the list that are very far out of order kind of move, they kind of bubble their way to where they need to by these adjacent swaps. Bubble sort is another n-squared algorithm, turns out. I was hoping somebody would say insertion sort. Can anybody guess what insertion sort might be for the name? Because it's the kind of sort that you probably got. You thinking? You don't have to put your arm down. I was feeling hopeful. So the insertion. This is the way that I was taught to sort cards in my hand because whenever I dealt them out on the table, my dad said, but now I see your cards and I'm going to beat you, which he meant physically, unfortunately. No, I'm just kidding. So you do this trick where you look through, how does it work? All right, so you start off, you know that the 10 by itself is in order, the 3 is not in order, so you insert it to where it needs to go relative to the 10. Now you go to the next one, here's a 4. You can take the 4 and stick it between the 10 and the 3, insert it in between there. So each time you have a little bit more of the list sorted. And the way that you do it is you take whatever card's next, figure out where it belongs in the list that you've got sorted, and stick it in. So that's insertion sort. It's a lot like selection sort, but sort of backwards. All right. Any other sorts? I guess I got 2 sorts out of you. Bin sort and radius sort, that's good. Nobody else has got a sword up their sleeve? I'll give you some better ones. All right. Oh, yeah, is that a hand? Oh, good.
Two of our, like, similar colors, probably.
But all we can do is say, here's 2 different, we can just ask, does this one belong to the left or to the right of this one? Those are the only questions we can ask. Those are comparisons. And so if it's the big list of numbers, we're just trying to figure out what order the numbers, we're not thinking of different ways of ordering them. They're always going to end up from smallest to biggest. The question is, how do we go about putting them in order? So that's what I was trying to go for. Right? All right, well, I will give you more sorting algorithms, because, you know, there you go. Sorry, I did this in a slightly different order. That insertion sort that I just described fits nicely with this binary search idea, right? So how do you figure out where you have a new card that needs to be inserted into the sorted list? How do you know where it goes? You could do, we'll call it binary search sort. Using log n comparisons, we can figure out where it belongs in the list, and we can stick it in. Since we're inserting n items, and each one takes log n time to figure out where it belongs, there's n log n total, which is a lot better than n squared. So now we're talking about sorting algorithms that can actually make some serious progress. Hillis, in the chapter on sorting, or the chapter that talks about sorting, talks about two algorithms, quicksort and merge sort. So what I'd like to do is, I'm going to tell you about quicksort. I'm not going to tell you about merge sort today. But you can read, Hillis does a pretty decent explanation of merge sort. They're both n log n algorithms. They're both algorithms that were on the, well, I guess in quicksort's case, the average running time grows like n times the logarithm of n. So here's quicksort. Well, this isn't quite going to work yet, but this is going to give you the main idea. We're going to take all the things that we're trying to sort, all cards, and we're going to take the median, take the one that's in the middle, then separate all the cards into smaller than the median or bigger than the median. Then we're going to sort the ones smaller than the median without having to deal with the ones bigger, because we know that they're not going to fit with these guys. Sort all of them. Then handle the bigger ones, sort all of them. How do you sort the smaller cards? We'll do it with quicksort. We'll find the median of the ones that are there, split that smaller list into a smaller list of the ones smaller than the median, bigger than the median. Then we have to sort the smaller set of piles. How do we do that? We're going to use quicksort again. This is a recursive algorithm. And what it has this nice property that since we've split them into the small cards and the big cards, once we've sorted the small cards, they don't interact with the big cards. Oh, and when we're done, we just glue it together, the whole list will be sorted. So, here's an example. There's too many numbers there to actually be an effective example, so don't worry about that. So, but the reason that this doesn't quite work is because if we actually could find the median, if we knew which one was going to be in the middle, then sorting is all easy. Finding the median is actually kind of hard. So, it turns out you don't actually have to get the median. You just have to find a card that's somewhere near the middle, and things still work out. And in fact, you don't even have to find something that's near the middle all the time. Half the time is enough. So half the time, you have to get a card that's about somewhere in the middle half. Let's see, do I have a picture of that? Yeah, anywhere in the middle half. So how can we find a card? We've got a big stack of cards. Here they are. When we sort these cards, one of these cards is going to be in the middle of that list. But we have no idea in advance which one. If we knew that, we'd be golden. So we're not going to shoot for quite that. We're going to shoot for any card that's anywhere near the middle, anywhere in the middle 50%. And we don't even have to get it right all the time, just half the time. So what would be a way to do that? How can I take a list of cards, and with basically no thought at all, pick a card that half the time is going to be in the middle half of the list once it's sorted. If it sounds hard, then you're thinking too hard. What would be the easiest thing I could possibly do to pick a card? I'll give you a hint. Hang on. No, not that one. You know, okay. That card, we don't know what card she has. Where does it fall in the list? We have no idea. What's the chance that it's going to fall in the middle half of the list? 50%. All right, so how many times do we have to play this game before she'll get something that's in this middle half?
Twice.
So half the time she'll get something that's in the middle half without even knowing, in advance what the cards were or anything about them. Just pick a random card. Pick a card, any card. Half the time it'll be in the middle half. And that's enough to actually basically split your cards into equal enough groups that make this algorithm go fast. So let's see if I can actually simulate this with the cards. Okay, ready? Here we go. I need to show you what's going on in apparently inverse video. All right, so first thing I have to do is pick the card that we want to end up near the middle. So I'm going to do that at random. I'll just take any card. That card is a card we're going to call the pivot. All the other cards either fall before or after this card is lit. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to run through all the cards and see.
Move it over a little bit.
Better?
Yes.
Which side of 9? Nine was random. Which side of 9 are all these cards on? 9 is actually a pretty good card for this.
Yes.
Probably. Can even put that 9 in. Well, no. 8, 10, 4, 3, 4. Okay, all right. We're not done sorting the list, but we've made some very good progress. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take these cards that are on the right-hand side, and I'm not going to sort them right now. I'm just going to put them aside for later. This was the pivot. I'm going to keep that as a kind of a marker in between. In fact, I'm going to turn it sideways. All right, now I've got a smaller set of cards. I'm going to now sort these cards. How do I sort these cards? I'm going to pick a random number, pick a random card, let that be my pivot, and I'm going to sort through everything else. Smaller or bigger than the pivot? Smaller, smaller. 8 is bigger, ace is smaller. Desk is kind of slippery. 6 is bigger, 7 is bigger, 2 is smaller, 8. All right, now same thing again. This pile on the right, I can't deal with now. I'm just going to deal with that later. Pivot I'm going to put as a marker, and now I'm down to these 5 cards, which I can just sort by eye. Once you get to a small enough list, it's easy. If it's down to 1, you know it's sorted. So let me just sort these and be done with it. Can you still see them? Yes. Okay. Now, where is this card? This is a 5. Where is this card going to go in the list? It has to be the next one in the order. Why? Because everything else in this pile is bigger than it. That's how we put them there. They were the ones that were bigger. So that 5 is done. Now I can take another stack. In this case, it's 4 cards. And I'll sort them again, because it's a small number. I'll just sort them in my hand like that. Okay. Here's another pivot. Where does that go? End of the list, because everything over here is bigger. So now we've got a big pile. We're going to have to sort it again. So pick a random card to be the pivot. This is going faster than the selection sort. I hope you realize. All right. Bigger or equal to 10, smaller, bigger, face cards. Okay, so this was a bad split. What happened just then is most of the cards ended up being bigger than the pivot. Only one of them ended up being smaller. We know that's sorted, it goes there. Pivot's gonna have to get added to the list. All right, pick another random card. Maybe we'll get lucky this time. Queen. King is bigger, 10 is smaller. Queen is tied. Jack is smaller, 10 is smaller. All right. Done with these, put that aside. We've got a stack of 4 cards, which I've been taking to be the cutoff for doing it by hand. Do that. Pivot has to go next. We're down to 2 cards, queen and king. Boom. Wah. Okay? Was that clear? Somewhat?
Yeah.
You wouldn't really want to sort cards that way, probably, because it's sort of very public. But nevertheless, you know, that was a lot of cards that I just went through in not too long a time. So quick sort, at least for cards, seems to be a better idea than selection sort. So let's see, what more can I tell you about that? So here it is again in words. We pick the pivot, We partition the list as to which ones are smaller and which ones are bigger, and then we sort the two halves using the same approach. Once we get to small enough lists, we just have to let it go. All right. Here's the code for quicksort. It's as simple as all that. We say if the list has one or fewer elements on it, it's already sorted. Just return it. Right? You can't have an unsorted list of one element, because who would it be out of order with respect to? Then we pick a random pivot by taking a number between 0 and the end of the list, and just take that element, call it the pivot. Then we partition the list with respect to that pivot, so we get, and what we get back is the ones that are smaller, in this case the ones that are equal, and the ones that are greater than. And then what we return is the sort of the left list, followed by all the ones that are equal to the pivot, followed by the sort of the right list. The partitioning, really, I just loop through all the elements in the list, and if the item is smaller than the pivot, I put it on the left. If the item is bigger than the pivot, I put it on the right. If the item is equal to the pivot, I put it in the middle. That's the whole thing. So, did I have an analysis of this? No, okay. So here's what I'd like to say about this. So what's really happening here? How long does this actually take? Each time we do the partition step, we have to flip through all the cards that we're currently dealing with. Whatever list size we're currently on, we have to flip through all of them. Each of those cards is now going to be put into a pile. If the original size of the list was m, the pile, each of these cards is going to end up in a pile. How big is the pile that the card's going to end up in? Well, if we could really split them in half, it would be n over 2. That's right. If it were the case that we were really lucky and every time we picked a pivot, it was the middle of the list, then each card is going to go join a list that's half as big as the list that it was just in. From there, it's going to join a list half as small as that, and half as small as that, and half as small as that. How many times am I going to touch each card? The first time I touch it, it goes from a list of n to a list of n over 2. The second time I touch it, it goes from a list of n over 2 to a list of n over 4. The next time it goes to a list of n over 8, until it's all by itself, and then it's sorted. Not quite, no. No. It's how many times you can divide n in half before you get down to 1. Is that what you were thinking? And you just thought that was n squared? What's that? You're not sure? Sorry. Log. Yes, thank you. Right, so each of the n cards gets dealt log n times. And so the total amount of touching of the cards is going to be n times log n. N log n. I think that's very slick. That's a different way of analyzing quicksort than I had ever done before. I was hoping that would be clear, but you don't know clearer than what. So we'll just leave it at that. All right, so here's what I'd like to do now. It's now 4:28. So we've got about 12 minutes. So what I'd like to do, let me see what else is in the note here. I've got your sorting stuff to run. All right, what I'd like to do is I wrote another song, this time about sorting algorithms. No video this time, just the song. But I'll do it as a karaoke, so you guys can sing along with the chorus if you'd like. So let me see if I can get that up and running. Nope. Easier said than done. Oh, there it is. Problem here. It's the tune of Kenny Rogers the Gambler, for obvious reasons that maybe aren't so obvious. I lost the karaoke thing. There it is. All right. Oh, and it's a little too big, too. Change the program on the fly. It still looks kind of big.
Like, so you didn't restart it? Or did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh. I make it too small, it's going to be too small. Is that somewhat readable?
That's good.
Okay. All right, so then we go back to the music. Start this running. Okay, all right, I'll advance the little karaoke thing as we go.
In an IT department on a Dell made in Texas, I met up with a sorter I didn't think I knew. I said, my name's Selection. He said, you can call me Quicksort. And since we're sharing cycles, won't you tell me what you do? I said, I put my cards in order by running through my data and pulling out the smallest card from the ones here in my fist. And after I remove it, I start the process over. And after n times through the pile, I've got a sorted list. So he looked at me with pity and said, son, that ain't too pretty. With n times through a list of n, your time's quadratic. And his voice fell to a whisper, and the disband stopped its whining. Said, if you're gonna sort a list, boy, you got to learn to sort it quick. You got to know when to swap them, know when to stop them, know when to terminate, and know when to run, whether it's strings or numbers. If it's in place or it's stable,
I'll define them later.
Your time for doing sorting to a minimum.
Modulate.
Pick a random card. It's the one I call the pivot. Split up the rest of them depending on their size. The big ones on the right I put on a stack for later. And if the left pile isn't sorted, the process I reprise. Each time I deal a card out, it joins a group that's smaller, quite often half the size. So I said yes, but then, with all those random pivots, you're gonna need to be quite lucky. He said, you might call it gambling, but to me it's n log n. You got to know when to swap them.
When to swap them.
Know when to stop them.
When to stop them.
Know when to terminate. And know when to run, whether it's strings or numbers. If it's in place or it's stable, keep your time for doing sorting to a minimum. Got to know when to swap up, know when to stop up, know when to terminate, and know when to run, whether it's strings or numbers. If it's in place or it's stable, keep your time for doing sorting to a minimum.
Sing along. I did the two verses at the end so that people could sing along. Oh, now we're into Simon and Garfunkel. Sorry. All right. So what I'd like to do, we don't quite have time left to show John's demo. So I'm going to start off next time showing these sorting algorithms with actually sorting lists. You can see how different they turn out being. What I would like to do is step through the song again and actually define some of the stuff that I didn't get to talk about and just remind you of what you may have already noticed. All right, in IT department on a Dell made in Texas, Dells are made in a bunch of places, including Texas. It seemed appropriate, given the country western theme. I met up with a sorter, comparing selection and quicksort, just like I did with the cards, sharing cycles, because they're running on the same computer, they're sharing cycles. All right, anyway. And this is just the definition of a selection sort, right? Put my cards in order, run it through the data, pull out the smallest card. After I remove it, I start again on what's left, and after n times through, I sort. All right, so he looks at me with pity because his quadratic sorts suck. That ain't too pretty, n times through a list of n, your time is quadratic. You're going to sort it quick. All right, so this verse is just about sorting in general, or the chorus, I guess. swapping elements in the list is how most of these sorting algorithms actually work. That you have a list laid out in front of you, and you just change the order of some of the elements. A lot of these algorithms are recursive, which means they have to know when to actually stop sorting. They can't sort a list of one element. They need to be done at that point. You can sort strings, you can sort numbers, you can sort lots of different things as long as there's an ordering, as long as there's some notion of what it means to be less than. An in-place sort is a sort where all the work that you're doing for the sort all takes place with the cards where they are. So in the Ben and Jerry's ice cream example, if all you can do is take out an ice cream canister and swap it with another one, everything's done in place. If you have to take all the ice cream out and lay it on the floor and then sort it and put it back in, that would not be in place. And different sorting algorithms actually are better at this than others. A stable sort is a sort where if you have two elements that are the same value, after you're done sorting, and one is to the left of the other, it'll still be to the left of the other. So that's a useful thing. For example, if we sort everybody, if we sorted everybody by first name, and we have more than one John here, if for some reason or other there was a reason that one John was before the other in the list, we'd like them to stay that way after the list is sorted. And a sort is called stable if it has that property. It's very easy to make selection sort stable. It's much trickier to make quick sort stable. So if you really care about stable sorts, quick sort might not be what you want. And what we're trying to do is minimize time. So, and then this is the definition of quick sort. You pick a pivot, you split up the cards bigger or less than the pivot. We put the ones that are big on a stack. We're going to deal with them again later. The left pile, we then sort recursively.
Did I use recursive?
No, but you just repeat the same process again. And this is the analysis. Each time you touch one of these cards, it's joining a smaller group. It starts off in a list of n. It goes down to often n over 2 or smaller after that. It sounds like it shouldn't work because it's random, right? You could actually get very unlucky and this won't work, but on average, it really turns out to be n log n. In the worst case, it can actually be quite bad. If you don't choose cards randomly, let's say you choose cards according to a certain rule, and that rule is bad. Like, for example, if the list is already sorted and you always pick the top card off the list, when you go to split it, everything's going to be on one side. At that point, quicksort actually becomes a quadratic algorithm. It's actually really slow. And so the fact that you're choosing cards at random is very helpful avoiding that worst case. And so it's not really about luck. It's not about gambling. It actually works out so that it really is n log n on average. So that's the sign. All right, so any questions or comments about that now that I've humiliated myself once again?
Are you going to make a video?
So one of the reasons I kept delaying the class, this particular lecture, over and over again is because I was hoping to get the video done. But I don't know. I mean, I didn't want to dress up in a cowboy suit. I just couldn't quite bring myself to figure out what exactly it should be. I was thinking maybe just hands dealing cards in sepia, and then it'll look kind of old. But no, I haven't done it yet. I'll think about it.
Are you going to release a children's CD?
Probably not. I mean, unless you consider yourself a child. I mean, my target audience is you guys, right? So it's not any lower than that.
Well, listen to
that
song
Sure. You can download it onto your iPod and listen while I'm talking.
Were you in a band when you were younger?
No.
Your voice is pretty good.
Thank you very much. This again was a MIDI file that I got off the web, but I did modulate the volume this time. That was a new trick that I hadn't tried before. Like when it was, his voice dropped to a whisper, the music was still playing really loudly at that point, so I muffled it a little bit, and I thought that was a nice touch. But I actually don't play any instruments well enough to be able to orchestrate one of these things. It's just the singing. All right, and that was my kids again in the background on the way to swap them. I kept them up way past their bedtime last night. All right, so that's it for today. Sorting next time, and I'll release another set of lecture notes as well. I think I'll probably do NP completeness from the book. I'll also tell you what chapter of the book. I think we're kind of falling out of sync with the book.